his lectures word by word. So it's not my overlook. It's a, now, I almost had heart failure. What? It's his Torah, the fact that I did all this effort and translated the Yiddish into the English doesn't make me the originator. So I will not publish this. But someone came to me here in Israel, someone who listens to the tapes, a person in his 40s, late 40s. And he's an activist, and he wants to put this into internet, or internet, I think it is. So he has all these plans. I told him, look, if you get permission from Rabbi Lichtenstein and Tova, you'll have my permission. But without their permission, you can't do anything, because I can't afford to cross the family. I can't afford to cross Rabbi and Tova. You understand? I know them on to 45 years. 45 years already, on to 46 years. So he spoke with me a year ago, spoke with me again. He has all these grandiose ideas. I said, what are you wasting my time for? Get the permission. Without the permission, there's nothing to talk. So my editor, my student Joey, tells me, Rebbe, did you see in the internet, they have the Rav Shia printed out word by word. I almost chalashed. I tell you, I was shaking when he told me that. So I said, I didn't tell Joey what. I was chayshish that it's my shayurim. So I said to Joey, get me a copy of what you're talking about. So sure enough, last week he gave, I just gave it back to him yesterday. He got me a copy. Thank God it wasn't me. It was someone in America wrote out one of the early Sheyurim. Not early, it was in 1970 or 72. I have it in my book. I have part of it in my book. It's an RCA talk the Rav gave on the Dibrot. You know, Kedako Bekodesh, he was filled with Chiddush and insight. So he wrote it out by Berurga and put it on the internet. Now, I can assure you that if Chaim Soloveitchik picks that up, there will be an explosion that will rock Yeshiva University. And I understand Chaim, because he, Tainis, it's his father's Torah, he wants. Now, on the other hand, as a Talmud, I look at it differently. I look at it, what's the purpose of Torah? Did I ever make a penny out of any of my tapes? I've gone into cars in America, the guy shows me, has 10 of my tapes piled up. I'm embarrassed, because if my shurim is so superficial that you can listen to them while driving, mimanavshach, either you're not listening or the shurim are worthless, because they're a good shia, you have to smack up a car. If you're involved in the shia, how can you drive a car? But did I ever make a penny? If anyone asked my rishut, the Jack is a witness. You've seen people ask me, can we copy this, can we copy that? As long as you give me credit. That's all I ask. Once a father sat in the shia of mine on the Holocaust, one of the shia you heard in Midrashit, and he sat in for 2 weeks, took notes, and I understand in Forest Hills, Tana Memorial, still in the mid-70s, and he gave over my shia word by word, except he didn't mention my name. It's not right. Maybe Gula alone. Okay, but anyway, my viewpoint is very simple. I told it to Tov Renara, and I said very simply, the Vilna Gaon, when he died, there was not one volume in his name. Today, you go into any library, you go into the National Library, you see 100 volumes listed in the Gaon's name. It was all put out by Talmidim and family. Was it all good? No, it's not all in an equal level. But over the course of time, water seeks its own level. The Biurei Hagra and the Shulchan Aruch, there isn't anyone in the world who doesn't study it. There's already been commentaries written on the commentary. Okay, that was put out by the children, copying from his Shulchan Aruch. You understand? Some of the material is excellent, some is not. Some of the Maaser Rabs are fantastic, some are not. But let water seek its own level. Don't try to stifle the Talmidim. What's happened here is that a lot of the Talmidim are stifled. Until we see Harold Reichman, Heshi Reichman's third volume, I'm not going to be happy. Now, my book is different. I'll tell you why my book is different. First of all, the biography is my own. I have a copyright on it. It's my own. So no one can criticize that I robbed the biography from someone. But the heart of the book is the Rav. The only thing is, I took over 200 different places and I took it out of context and put it all together. So this already is scholarship. You understand what I'm saying? This, the family cannot have a copyright on. This is scholarship, and there have already been court cases. As long as I don't reproduce the entire Sheyurim word by word, but I take from over 200 different sources, a paragraph here, a paragraph there, and I put it together coherently with footnotes and sources, this is first-rate scholarship. So no one can fault me. You understand? So be Ezrat Hashem. But I have to differentiate. When you saw Michal Shmini, and you were witnesses a week ago, his tongue was out. He was with me in the car. He couldn't believe what I have. I was telling him what I've done. He couldn't believe it. But I told him, he said, make it available. I can't make it available because I'm afraid of the family. And if Bar Ilan University, the Torah Culture Department of the Jewish Agency, if they were shaking and crying to me and they called me because I sent back, my daughter drew up a legal letter for me. I figured, well, I'm giving them a legal letter. They'll be happy. Ani manik lechem reshut, aval ani shomer haskuyot. My daughter drew up, you know, as lawyers can do, a beautiful letter in Hebrew with exactly what I want to say. The editor calls me 2 days later and says, and he pleads with me. I couldn't believe it. He's pleading with me. You must sign. I told him, what's going on here? Okay, now, back to 1956. It was a beautiful, beautiful year that year. Anyway, this talk was not a major talk. You'll understand what I mean by a major talk when we go into the next talk. But this talk, the Rav got up and they honored him and they cajoled him. And you understand, why does the Rav agree to be honored? Believe me, I can understand the Rav very well. You're going to give him honor, what's honor? But I know what's involved. Sometimes you agree to speak or you agree to be honored. Many times invitations have gone out for parlor meetings, they're honoring me. Why are they honoring me? Because it attracts my students, it'll attract my friends, parents. It brings in money. You have to sacrifice yourself. You owe that to Klal Yisrael. So the Rav agreed to be honored. He agreed to be honored. But he gave a talk that night, the heart of it, why I identify with why. You and what you heard last week. The Divrei Torah was, I would say, it was incidental to the talk. Not coincidental, it was incidental, but it was not the heart of the talk. This was what I call a minor talk. Nevertheless, the Rav lets his hair down. And as someone said to me, I don't know if it was Avner, but someone else said to me after the shiur last week or on Sunday, the Rav was striking out at everybody. And yes, yeshiva already by the mid-50s under this tremendous pressure. Number one, the German Orthodox community has made a conscious decision to laugh at yeshiva, to negate it, to annihilate it. And the Rav goes into this brilliant analysis of the difference between yeshiva and German Orthodoxy. What's fascinating is that word by word he repeated the shiur, that part of it, in 1970. So if anyone tells you the Rav changed his mind, they are absolutely not being fair to the Rav's memory. And I have it in my book, word by word. Again, as I said to you, I thought I had the only copy of it. I know how I got that tape. I could tell you a detective story now. Your hair would stand on edge how I came up with that tape of the 1960s. Because I was living in Israel. You got to remember, although my English is still Yankee English, I'm living here almost my whole mature life. I'm living here, basically. So, but I got the tape. And I thought I had the only copy in the world. And I was so afraid to cite from that tape because I was afraid people would come to me, where did you get this? And it involves thievery and murder and every crime in the world to uncover that tape. Blackmail. Call it what you want. You can't imagine how he got that tape. And I'm not pulling your leg. If there wasn't murder, at least there was blackmail and a bit of thievery involved, etc. But Baruch Hashem, there's a shacht in Kosher Mishpat that enables me to say it, that I didn't do a sin. But when I saw it was printed in the Commentator a year after the Rebbe's death, I went and edited the tape already. I took what I need for the book, and it's beautiful. The only difference is what I told you, and it's a beautiful difference, how the Rav in 56 uses the word shtechshich, and in 70 he uses the word sneakers. It's not that the shtechshich changed into sneakers, but it's simply the mentality of the boys. In 1956, we lived in Yiddish was our native language for Torah. Yedeinut gewus v'shtechshich sein. By the 1970s, I used the word shtechshich. They look at you, that's sneakers. They were no sneakers in Berlin. Could you imagine Professor Egan Mittwoch is running in with sneakers that only sportsmen use? You understand? You got to put it into context. But it's a very cute difference between 56 to 70. But that was one attack. And the Rav actually compares between the lines, if you picked up what I said last week, he actually compares German Orthodoxy to a Catholic university. And that's the whole concept of a synthesis of mind control, of thought control, call it what you wish. And this is the Rav, I have to say, this is exactly the Rebbe I knew. And by the way, I'm making no comment whether the Rav is right or wrong, whether it's viable, not viable, whether we agree, don't agree, it's all unimportant. What's important here is to understand the Rav, and what the Rav says, that there's no synthesis, that a synthesis is cheap, it degrades the person. And there has to be, if there's a thesis and an antithesis, then both are correct. And what we want is Gedolei Yisrael, that's the thesis, And the antithesis is that Bisman said we have to go to college. And that's also revealing his whole approach to college. So it shows you the differences between Hirsch and this is the Rav. And I, Baruch Hashem, I knew it intuitively. I wrote about it long before these tapes surfaced. People challenged me, particularly Rabbi J.J. Schechter, who's a wonderful scholar, but he didn't know the Rav intimately. He was not a Talmud of YU, and people forget that. And he views the Rav from the gestalt of a mere yeshiva boy who went to Yale University. And you can't view the Rav. You have to know the Rav intimately. And Eino Chinami, the Rav, this was the Rav. And if you'll ask me whether he held every Jew that ever lived should go to college, the answer is no. If he holds that, excuse me, Bizman Hazer, we should all go to college, absolutely. If you'll ask me if he was opposed to Lakewood, 1,000%. And time and again, he never said it publicly. Rabbi Aaron Cutley, he loved Derech Eretz, I have that in my book too, his whole talk at the Yechinuch Hatzmai dinner, where he speaks about Rabbi Aaron. I have some very moving words in my book, and you can see it also, Fire in My Soul, the book on Irvin Bunim. He loved Rabbi Aaron, and he would never criticize him publicly. But privately, I know what he said with that fellow from Lager, from Boston. I'll mention the name. You may know the family, Dr. Lesser. It was the Lesser family. Lesser. Dr. Lesser. Well, they're all gone already. Dr. Lesser was a well-known doctor, and his son was supposed to go to Harvard, graduating Maimonides, and instead he opts out for Lakewood. And the Rav, and you know, in those years, the Rav was hysterical. The parents were all upset, but this was a conflict in Hashkafa. And the Rav, this is what he believed. You had to learn Torah, just like he did with his own son. And if you can go to Harvard, you go to Harvard. You go to Yale, you go to Yale. YU, all right, you go to YU. And he says, but you have two heads. Better to have two heads than no head. And this is the way he viewed it. Then his attack on the right-wing world, and this, of course, the right wing was not that strident yet. This is the mid-50s, it's starting to shift. But already by the mid-50s, YU was constantly under attack. They were Bodek, you know, Bodek Tzitzis is the expression. Rabbis Belkin and Soloveitchik weren't slim enough. The yeshiva's going off the path. So you see, he hit them literally, what's the expression? Under the belt. Because what he says about Dr. Belkin, you have to stand in awe. That from the time Dr. Belkin, remember, if you read Bernard Rebel, you see what went on in the 30s, which yeshiva couldn't help. They were constantly in arrears. Rabbein weren't paid for 6 months. They were constantly in debt. It was a terrible, terrible situation. And when Dr. Belkin took over, he ultimately paid off all the debts that the yeshiva owed, and faculty was never paid late. I mean, I know in my time on the yeshiva, it never happened. I joined the yeshiva faculty 62 through 69. It never happened that faculty was paid late. But Rabbi Soloveitchik, the Rebbe, is talking in the mid-50s. He says Dr. Belkin borrowed money to pay the faculty. And he says, those frum guys that are attacking us, let them be bidek their own tzitzit. I'm wearing tzitzit. Dr. Belkin is wearing tzitzit. When is the last time they paid their faculty on time? And you know, it's a lav d'oraita, lo salim pursa biyomoti tein schoro, it's a mitzvah tasei, it's a lav. And I'll tell you honestly, it's the only thing I told you last week, with the long al-chaits, it's the only, from the chayodim, I keep it in my machzer, I say it, my sons-in-law, everyone has it, we're all not satisfied with the yashamnu, but God knows it's not enough, it's not clear enough, it doesn't spell it out, but that's the only chait I refuse to say. I don't want to sound arrogant, but since it's not a takonor, if it's not from the Anshek Nesit HaGadol, it's not from the Ika Hasidah, what's in the Siddur, you all have to say. I don't think I ever committed some of the sins, but we say it, it's a din on the tzibur to say, we say it together, not to, you know, the goyim say it, not to embarrass anybody else. But what I say privately, I have a right to admit one line. That line I admit because to my knowledge, I've never withheld, I've borrowed money to pay someone off that I owe, the worker that worked for me. Like it's not shayach to me that I shouldn't pay him immediately. It's beyond my mentality. In Israel, I've suffered because of it, because Israelis take advantage of you, and I don't have to tell you, I can't go into detail, but in Israel, rule of the thumb is always withhold money so you have something over the kablan, something over the worker, he'll come back, he'll fix it. Maybe times have changed here, I don't know, but I can't do it. It's not within my nature. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. But this is his attack on right-wing orthodoxy. You're attacking the yeshiva, we are tzaddikim compared to you. Now, whether that attack would be viable today, I have my doubts, because today I would like to imagine, I don't know, maybe you can tell me, I would like to imagine that Yeshiva Chaim Berlin and Teir Rav Hadass and the yeshiva are paid on time, and faculty members don't have to worry whether the check is covered, has kisui, Today, the attack on yeshiva is much more basic, a totally different Weltanschauung. In those days, outside of Lakewood, everybody went to college, whether you went to Torah Vadas, whether you went to Mir, whether you went to Chaim Berlin, everyone went to college. The attacks then, what was true in the 50s, is not true in the 90s. But this is the Rav fighting back in 1956. Now, then he ends off, and we'll finish off today with the Divrei Torah, he ends off with the whole concept of Tzimtzum. He wants to elaborate. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order to make the world, brought this great carbon of Tzimtzum. He's with something, something does exist. I've studied with the Rav in Otanya and Kabbalah, Lurianic Kabbalah. This is a basic theme. And the Rav has come back to Tzimtzum. If there's one theme in philosophy I've heard the Rav expound, it's Tzimtzum. There's no theme that he has handled as much and come back as much to the concept of Tzimtzum. Now, why is Tzimtzum so important? Why did God do this? What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to teach us? And this is what the Rav wants to explain. And then he makes the point that there's a natural drive within man to seek godliness. And the difference is, however, when you have a domesticated ayol and when you have a wild animal. When an animal is wild, there's no telling what he'll do to find the water. He'll run, he'll trample over people. When an animal is domesticated, he'll walk gingerly. He knows the path to the water. And what the Rebbe is trying to develop here, that Jews see God. And again, he made the comment with the communist world, which I cannot tell you. Again and again, the Rebbe comes back to communism. And again, Avi sits here. What bothers the Rebbe so much about communism? And what you don't understand is that anyone raised at the turn of the century, and if you had a brain in your head, you had to be tantalized by communism. The idea was overwhelming, beautiful, social justice, inherent equality. Because look around this room, there is something unfair. You don't understand, there's something so unfair. In this room right here now, let's say there are 12 human beings sitting here. 12 human beings. But we're not all equal. We're not all equal. This young man has $1 million in the bank. He can get any doctor he wants if he gets sick. And this fella has $2,000 in the bank. He has to go to Patholim and wait online and get a doctor trained in Romania. Do you know the Romanian doctor jokes in Israel, etc.? There's something inherently unfair. You understand? This is a blemish upon our human dignity. This fella married a poor girl. This fella married a rich girl. There's something wrong here. This is a blemish upon our dignity. This fellow here is a street cleaner and he has 10 lovely children. And this fellow here is a surgeon and he has one child. Why should the surgeon make $500,000 a year and the street cleaner $46,000 a year? There's something wrong here. And this was the great attraction of communism. And anyone who was in the Rav, and people told me this, again, I'm very fortunate, I've lived way beyond my years because of the people I yet knew and I interviewed and I spoke with, always curious, always inquisitive. And I remember Professor Dienstock of the YU Library, he's a man in his 80s today, Abe Dienstock was telling me, if you weren't involved with communist thought, you weren't young. And he told me a list of Gedolei Yisrael, he said, that had a struggle whether or not to be a communist, to be a socialist, etc. And that's why the Rav constantly comes back to it. And the Rav makes the point that to me is golden, that despite all the communist indoctrination, they could not eradicate God in Russia. Just think for a minute what I'm telling you, what the Rav said. And he said, this is part of the native, the indigenous driving man, the indigenous driving man, it's ontological that he has a soul, he seeks God. Communism could not eradicate it. But what a difference if you're domesticated or wild. And then he speaks of the wildness of the American Jew when we left off last week. And again, it's so moving because I grew up, I saw that with my own eyes, how the Rav describes the American Jew because he's not domesticated, knows nothing about Yiddishkeit. He does things that are wild, crazy, but he does it with such tumimiskeit. And I'll never forget my first rabbinate, exactly what the Rav is describing, how Yiska Taiman Yom Kippur, I was the rabbi of the little Orthodox shul in Lower Marion Synagogue, Dalekinwood, Pennsylvania, 1961. my first Yom Kippur out of the yeshiva. The year before I had davened in YU and Rabbi Lessons Minyan, Zeichat Tzadik Levracha, and now I'm in the big world. The earlier years I davened in Lakewood, I know what Rosh Hashanah is, Yom Kippur is, and here I am in the big world. And Yom Kippur before Yiska, there's a traffic jam coming to the temple, and the police have to direct the traffic. And the Rav describes it. He says how they drive up Yom Kippur, Faskarat Nefashat, or the unveiling. How the Rav picked this is mind-boggling, because you have no idea. Hakamet Matseva, and you come, how many shaitas I used to get. My phone would burn. Rabbi, when do we put the veil on the monument? Who will lift the veil off? Rabbi, at what point do we put the veil on? Are you allowed to slide the veil on the other side of the monument, or do you put rocks on to keep it on top? And these people are asking with the seriousness that we ask about when we should observe Shabbos when we fly to Japan and cross the international date line. Or, Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm now going to New York. I have no idea where I'm going to wind up for Shabbos yet. Hashem Yirachem, what the reports are coming out of New York. So, can you imagine? I'm stuck in an airport in Montreal for Shabbos. What do you do for Kiddush? What do you do for davening? What do you do for Lechem Mishnah? What about if you have two marzipan challahs? Can you use that for Lechem Mishnah b'diavad? I'm being serious. Can you make Kiddush over soda? Everybody, Shalom, these are serious questions. I don't have to tell you. Can I make Abdullah over Coca-Cola? It's a less serious question. Kiddush over soda is a much more serious question. These are real questions, absolutely. No? That's the way the American Jew tweets the questions about the curtain on the monument. And the Rav, you see, the Rav was an American rabbi. When all is said and done, of all the Gedolei Yisrael in America, Rav Moshe was never ever, I can never believe that Rav Moshe ever had a stand at a cemetery where they took the curtain off the monument. I can't believe that Rav Baron Cutlever went through this. I can't believe that Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin went through this. But the Rav went through it, Pshuto Kamashmo. He was a rabbi in Boston. And this is what he calls the undomesticated wildness in the Jew. He's not tamed. He doesn't understand. He seeks out God. He's tamimistic. The sincerity is there. But look at the crazy acts it leads him to. And now I'm going further. Yahadut demanded one thing of all of us, especially those of us who know the path to the Afikei Mayim. We who have learned in yeshiva, we who know Torah, we must understand that we will not accomplish it all. As much mesirat nefesh as we have, as much success in chinuch, we must always realize that there is more to achieve. The goal must always be beyond our reach. We must never be satisfied with where we are. Even if we are at the Afikei Mayim, still we need more. Still we must accomplish more. Don't sit back on your laurels, the Rav is saying. Even if we're lamdanim, even if we're graduates of the yeshiva, even if we're rabbanim of prominent Orthodox shuls, we still must accomplish more. The Mishnah says it openly. And the Rav cited the Mishnah in Kalim, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav, Esher Kedushatayim, Eretz Yisrael, Mikudeshet, Michal Haratzot. And the Mishnah goes on with all the Kedushat. Why do we need all these 10 Kedushat? Why isn't one Kedusha enough? Why did God institute this concept of various gradations of Kedusha? This concept is to teach us that we must certainly strive for more. We certainly had Kedusha in Chutz Laretz, in the Jewish home. And if those of you that have heard the radio this morning know about what went on last night, in the presidents of the Mishkan, Nasi Yisrael, this is Mamish in Yana Dioma, because Asa Weizmann got up and told these Jewish leaders from all over the world that more important than your money, you should settle here. And you should hear the reaction this morning. Chief Rabbi Jacobowitz cursed out the president. The Melchior of Denmark, which is some story, these are people 7, 9, he says his grandchildren, ninth generation Danish. They've been over 300 years, and they're Shomer Mitzvah. This is not a simple matter, the Melchior family. Michael Melchior, the Mankal of Meimad, is my student. His wife is my student. I have to understand, this is not a simple matter. And he says, the president is giving us Mussar that we should settle in Eretz Yisrael. He says, we want to remain in Denmark. Those that want to settle can settle. Rabbi Lord Jacobowitz, the poor president, no matter what he says, they're attacking him, shooting him, killing him. So the Rav says, yes, we had Kedushin Chutz Laretz, the Jewish home. I don't have to tell you what the Jewish home was in Chutz Laretz. That, by the way, is very, very fascinating. I just want to tell you in between the lines, this word on the Jewish home, this allusion at the famous convention of Degel HaTorah, you don't remember, 1990. Jack, you were here already, right? Where Rav Shach, were you here where Rav Shach had to give the word whether they form a government with the Marach or they don't form a government with the Marach? They had this famous convention. There was still unity among the Jews. And at that convention, there was Rav... Of course, Agudat Yisrael, that split was already there. But there was Rav Ovadia Yosef and the Belzer Rebbe sitting next to Rav Shach. I have it all on videotape. All on video. Maybe for Purim we'll make a special party. I'll bring it in. It's something worth seeing. And the Israeli TV prime time on the news gave a half hour to that convention live coverage. And then Rav Shach speaks. That's where he rips apart the kibbutzim, how they destroyed Kashrut and Shabbat. And when he starts to talk about Shabbat in the old Jewish home, he starts to cry and he breaks into Yiddish, his native language. It's an amazing tape. And Rav Ovadia Yosef doesn't know what he's saying, and he turns to the Belzer Rebbe, who leans over and explains to Rav Ovadia what Rav Shach is saying in Yiddish. That's exactly what, you know, he starts describing there, what the Rav doesn't have to describe, or what it meant. The father makes Kiddush, the mother lights candles, the children sit around the table, there's kavod, there's interaction of the generations, the parents and the children and the grandchildren, and kavod, mutual respect. You know, in a non-religious house, all this doesn't exist. The children don't talk to the parents don't talk to the children laugh at the grandparents, the generation conflict, nothing unites them. Friday night is nothing, it's just another night, it's a night here in Israel to get drunk, to have dope, etc. And the Rav says, yes, we had Kedushin Chutz Laretz, but not as much as in Eretz Yisrael. Why did the Jew long so much for Eretz Yisrael? Because it had more Kedusha than Chutz Laretz. Therefore we have the Halacha, and he quotes the Gemara in Shabbat, Chafala Famer Aleph, from the Sugya of Hanukkah, the Malin B'Kodesh, V'yein Moritin. We must constantly strive, constantly want to go up, and finally you've achieved Eretz Yisrael. So, it's still not Yerushalayim. You've achieved Yerushalayim. It's still not Har HaBayit, etc. You never achieve it all. And the Rav said there is an attic. All this was said in beautiful Yiddish. There is an attic on top in the Aliyah of the Kodesh Kadashim, where even the Kohen HaGadol cannot go on Yom Kippur. That's how holy it was. And I give you the source. It's a Tosefta. The Rav referred to a Tosefta. He didn't spell it out, but it's a Tosefta in Kalim Baba Kama. Anyone know what I mean by Kalim Baba Kama? Yeah, thank you. Woodrow Wilson knows. The president knows. The Tosefta, there it's divided in Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Batra. Just like our Babas, but there it's by Kalim too. So in Kalim Baba Kama, Perek Aleph, Subdivision Zion, I'm quoting, of course, according to Tsukuman. You know what I'm saying? Because our Tosefta in the Gemara is not divided. But the Rav Tsukumandl, his division has been accepted. Even Professor Lieberman didn't change Rabbi Tsukumandl's division. You know what I'm talking about? If you don't know, I can verbalize it. But I'm quoting from the Tsukumandl division. I'm quoting from Aleph Zion. And I'm quoting, Aliyat Beit Kadosh Kadoshim Chamura Bi Beit Kadosh Kadoshim Shebe Beit Kadosh Kadoshim Kol Nichnas Lisham Kol Hoshana Lishana Lavodat Yom Kippurim Abar Panim Biyom Uliyat Beit Kodesh HaKadoshim Ein Nichnasin Ela Lishanim Leida Mahitzlichan. What does that mean? And I'll cite to you from the Melechet Shlomo on the Perish Tekelim Perek Aleph Mishneh Tet. You know what it means? That the Aliyah of the Kodesh Kadoshim, no one went into. The only reason they ever entered is once in many years, simply to check if anything had to be repaired. It's like tefillin. You all understand, you must have tefillin checked every few years. Why? Twice in 7 years? Because tefillin is the If you have to know that the Pashyata Beseder, that nothing has, that the Batima Beseder, that the Rebuah is Beseder, whatever it is, that the Tfirata Beseder, that the Sarima, the Sarata Beseder, you have to know every few years, of course, Tfilin, you use it day in and day out. So it's like a car, it wears down. So the same thing with the Aliyah over the Kadosh Kadoshim, once in a few years they went to check. And that was only because they had no choice, but it was so holy that even the Kohen Gadol couldn't enter. So this is the concept of Kedusha. And therefore, the Rav says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mitzamsem himself, so that the Jew would constantly have to strive for him, seek him out, strive to discover him. His Kedusha could not be all over. It had to be limited and hidden. A Jew must constantly strive. We must pave the way in striving for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and domesticate the Jew in his quests for his Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rav runs out, I greatly evaluate, he's talking to the Rabbanim, I greatly evaluate what you rabbis are doing throughout the United States of America. Without you, the non-Orthodox would have conquered everything. There would be endless mamzerot, endless kohanim legrushot. I do not live in an ivory tower. The United States is not New York. I know full well about the balabatim and poyerim who make a little money and then become the baldea in the shuls. Anyone know what the word poyerim means? See, it's a generation conflict. Poyerim is the Russian word for an idiot, for a jerk, for a dummy, for a peasant, for a bulvan. And this is exactly what happens in the American shuls. Anyone who gets a little money becomes a member. You get a little bit more money, you make contributions. Misha yesh hameya yesh hadeya. You're already telling the rabbi off. You're telling him how high the mechitza has to be. You're telling him how long the sermon has to be. You understand? These are balabatim. And only the Rav could talk like this. Because Rav Moshe, Rav Aaron, Rav Yehenkin, they didn't have balabatim like this. But the Rav was a real, I'm a rabbi in Boston. I know what American balabatim can be like. And he says, I know what you rabbis go through. I know the, and now, this is unbelievable. This is the only place I know of where the Rav speaks about one of the most important moments of American Orthodoxy. And the only place I know of, he says, I know the Achmet Nefesh that you have in the Rav, that he says, I had tremendous Achmas Nefesh a few weeks ago. Now, you know what I'm about to quote, what the Rav is speaking about? Let me just fill you in. The issue of Mamzeret was a terrible issue. At that time in the conservative movement, and I refer you to my shir on Sunday, I re-listened to the shir. Give me 1 second, Rico. I re-listened to the shir on Sunday. I have to tell you that I was good. The first part of the shiur, I analyzed the sociological inferences of Rav Moshe's Tshuvot. I believe I hit the nail on the head. And I said to Jack before class that I can't blame the Reform for being antagonistic, because they already know where Rav Moshe Feinstein is, and he doesn't even waste any breath in them, doesn't he? He throws them out, he dismisses them. And by the way, we have no choice. As a Torah Jew, I love every Jew with all my heart and soul. But as a Torah Jew, I cannot yield and bend on the halacha. I am a slave. I am a servant of the halacha. Period. So, in the 1950s, the conservative movement was much more conservative with a small c. And they had a Beit and Forgotten at the seminary. Do you know who headed up the Beit? Let's see if anyone knows. Who headed it up? Professor Boaz Cohn. Any get that Boaz Cohn administered was accepted by every Beitin in the world. Boaz Cohn was a Jew, Yerei Shemayim, Makbid, Kalaka, Chamura. He was a great expert in response literature. If you'll ask me, what was he doing at the seminary? This goes into what I alluded to on Sunday when I spoke about the Beit Medrash for rabbis in Riverdale and the traditional part of the conservative movement. So that would take me a number of weeks to analyze Chachmat Yisrael vis-a-vis Talmud Torah. It's not a topic that I'm an Amoritzin. Believe me, I have much to say on the topic, but it's not for now. It would take us far abreast of the field. But for whatever the reasons were, Boaz Cohn was at the seminary. That's where people in Chokhmat Yisrael found Parnassah and found the calling. Any get that Boaz Cohn did was accepted by every Beitin in the world at that time, including the Beitin of Agudat HaRabbanim. And those of you can check it out. I'm not telling stories that can't. It's absolutely so. Now, in addition, at the seminary at that time, the chancellor or the president was Louis Finkelstein. Louis Finkelstein himself was the son of the Rav of East New York. His father, I think his father's name was Rav Shimon Finkelstein, was a Europeisha Rav, was a Rav, you know, with a long beard and wore the uniform. Louis Finkelstein himself was rabbi of the largest Matan Orthodox shul in the Bronx at that time, Kilat Israel of the East Bronx. That's where I met my wife. That's where Bnei Akiva used to meet. It's the largest Orthodox shul. You have no idea. When Finkelstein became president of the seminary, so some people criticized him, the Young Israel viewpoint, that he's not no longer from. So the president of Kilat Israel wrote a letter that I can testify that Rabbi Finkelstein does not carry on Shabbos. Ad kidei kach, he's makpid kala kachamura. So you had Finkelstein, and of course you had Professor Liebman. Now, Professor Liebman had the advantage, not only was his, you know, the seminary always had the seminary minyan at that time was totally Orthodox with a mechitza. Are you aware of that? In the seminary, today they have two minyanim. They have an innovative minyan and the old Shaul Lieberman minyan. But that minyan of Shaul Lieberman and Professor Finkelstein was strictly Orthodox. So you had Professor Lieberman, who not only was acknowledged as a Gaon Adir, I mean, you're dealing with a Slabatka graduate, the former head of Machon Harry Fischel, the son-in-law to Reb Meir Berlin, the Rub's cousin by marriage, etc. Now, what he was doing in the seminary, should he have been in the seminary, it's a different story. But Lieberman never, there was never anyone in the world that suspected or accused him of not being Orthodox. You could criticize him for being in the seminary, but he certainly was Orthodox. So, by the mid-50s, there were very serious negotiations between the Rav and his cousin, who he was quite, you know, who he's quite friendly with, because there was evidently an ongoing relationship between the Rav and Shaul Lieberman. I have it in my book as well. I have a nice story about them, which is not, I can't go into it now, but maybe you've heard me tell the story over the years about the Kohen and Tumat Sheretz. That's between the Rav and Professor Liebman. So they were working on something that would have been epic making, that the seminary, in other words, the conservative rabbinical body, the Rabbinic Assembly it's called, and the Rabbinical Council of America were willing to form a joint Beitin that would be acceptable to both organizations, and all marriages would end in get. And these getting would be done by a joint Beitin. And the negotiations practically reached fulfillment. Now, what held back and what ruined it? Because the Rub's condition is historically very important. The Rub's condition was that, fine, he'll join with the seminary, he'll join with the rabbinical assembly, the Beitin, each one has veto power, so that you have to have a Beitin where every member, in other words, the seminary puts up a person like Boaz Cohn, there's no problem. He's accepted 100%. But the Rub's condition was obviously that once this goes into play, all conservative rabbis, all members of the Rabbinical Assembly, by belonging to the Rabbinical Assembly, have to accept as the rule that everybody does gittin through this Beitin. No longer individual gittin, and no longer rabbis in the conservative movement who will marry people, remarry people without a get. And Lieberman told the Rav, after consulting with the RA and the leaders, that there's no way they can deliver. Because already at that point, the seminary was so fragmented, not so much the seminary as much as the rabbis in the field. See, Mordechai Kaplan by this time has very little influence. He's on his way out of the seminary. They've tried to fire him time again. I believe by 56, if I'm not mistaken, they actually are able to fire him because Mordechai Kaplan turns 75, and they say to him, no one can go on teaching when they're 75. It's impossible, and they finally get rid of him. So Mordechai Kaplan's influence in the seminary is much more muted. But the rabbis in the field, you turn to the Rabbinical Assembly, you turn to the RA, I don't know what percentage, but I'm willing to bet you that the percentage ran about 20 to 25% were Reconstructionists. And they wouldn't hear of it. And it was such a diversified membership already that Lieberman came back and told the Rub, this is the true story, by the way, and this is the only time I know of that the Rebbe referred to it in public. He let his hair down. Well, these were rumored. I was a kid in the yeshiva. I can't tell you what was going on. The rumors, the conservative, the Orthodox joining together of faith in, you know, again, there was a right wing already in America. People were going crazy against it. And when the Rav was told that the entire IRA can't belong, will not agree, he said, then we've accomplished nothing. You know, if the whole purpose of this tremendous compromise to form the joint Beitman and thereby give certain recognition to the conservative movement was to save Mamzeret in America. The minute you don't save Mamzeret in America, Mahu ilu chachamam betakam tam. And the Rav says, I know the Akbat Nefesh I had a few weeks ago and was ready to form a joint Beitman with the conservative for Dini Yishud. My condition was that they would not allow any of their members to do Dini Yishud against the Halacha. They refused. Nevertheless, as much as you have done, you have not accomplished enough. There are Esher Kedushot. Keep on going. Malim the Kodesh. And remember, the ultimate and greatest Kedusha is the Oren Habrit. That's the Rav's talk, 1956. Just to comment on the last part, it's a meridic little drusha that stands unto itself. When you get up in front of BMT boys and you're teaching these type of students, not only BMT, Israelis too, everyone can use the Musa. Esa Kedusha, Sintzum. Why did God Mitzamsem himself? Why isn't Malach Haaretz Kavodo? Why can't Jesse Sarid wake up in the morning or Shulamit Aloni and see God's presence? Because God wanted man to strive, to run, to search, to seek. God doesn't make himself available that easily. Finding God is an ongoing process. And as much as you achieve, don't sit back on your laurels. There's still more to go. Esa Kedusha. And the ultimate Kedusha eludes us. The Alan, the Aliyan, the Beit Kodshei Kedushim, even the Kohen Gadol can't go into. You can't achieve it all. You Rabbanim have done great work. Kol HaKavod Lechem. You have saved part of America for Yiddishkeit. But nevertheless, don't sit on your laurels. Keep on striving. And remember, the ultimate Kedusha is the Aron HaBrit. With all that the Rebbe explained a week and 2 weeks ago, the learning, the lashon, we're not yekis, we don't believe in synthesis, etc. Now, I want to give you one source. Those of you that are interested in the topic that I alluded to, because I never heard the Rebbe discuss it publicly. You have to understand this was dynamite. Even in the mid-50s, you're going to bring in the conservative movement and give them recognition. Today, Mandach HaShemei, I mean, if any Orthodox rabbi, can you picture on the YU faculty, for the sake of argument, Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig will suggest, your relative will suggest the Rav's position of 56. You know what will happen? The rest of the faculty, they'll issue a chayrim against him. In Maimonides, they won't allow his proposal into the library. You understand what I'm saying? Don't judge this by 1996. But even in 1956, this was quite a step to take. And the Rav was willing to do it on condition he could solve Mamzeret. But the minute he couldn't get total agreement, and you know what's amazing? We heard these rumors and heard these rumors, and here the Rav confirms everything. Now, I refer you to the late Louis Bernstein. You know who I'm talking about, right? Rabbi Louis Bernstein, who was Mr. RCA, the only one who was elected 3 times. He was, by nature, from the day he graduated Yeshiva College, which I think was in 47 or 48, maybe as late as 49, but I know Louis Bernstein was, by nature, he was always involved in klal work. He was a dynamo. Any of you study with Louis Bernstein, ever you have him in college, you know what I'm saying? He could never sit still. He was always on the go, always hyperactive. And he wrote a doctorate on the history of RCA. That doctorate was later published. Unfortunately, it's very primitive, meaning that it was not edited properly, and there's no index to it. There's not even a table of context. If you're familiar with the book, I don't know how Sheingold publishers put out such a volume. There was no table of context indexed as upgeret that there wasn't. But the book has material that no one else in the world has touched. He had access to all the archives. He did his spade work. He knew the players. What I have just described, you will find discussed with some footnotes on page 70. The book is called Challenge and Mission, the Emergence of the English-Speaking Orthodox Rabbi. Okay? So that will complement what I've just referred to in class. Gentlemen, we're now ready to move back one earlier year. We have a date for this too. It's a year and a month earlier. February 9th, 1955. It's exactly the same setting as the talk I just gave. It's at the Yeshiva University Rabbinic Alumni Midwinter Conference. Now, at this conference, the YURA conference, the Rav was not being honored. And here already it wasn't an after-appeal speech or an after-dinner speech. Here it was a fundamental basic paper presented by the Rav. And here already you have the Rav Kol Gadluto. This already is a philosophic paper, overtones of the Mora Nevuchim. You see all of Shas dancing before your eyes, his insight. He gets involved with YU, but that is incidental, not coincidental, but once again incidental, but it's only incidental to the heart of the paper. Now, when this tape surfaced, and I don't know how this tape surfaced, I have my own theory, and I'll just mention it because I cannot tell you the value of these tapes and a few others. These tapes are not from Manny Holzer. See, a lot of people know that Rabbi Holzer, whatever the reasons were, by 1970, Rabbi Emanuel Holzer was the Rav's right-hand man. And the world does Manny Holzer a great debt. By now the Rav is ill and he's weak. And it's not just Manny Holzer, then his eldest son David, by the mid-70s, or the early 70s already, David is the Rav's gabbai. And then Shamus. And then by the late 70s into the 80s, it's Barry Holzer. So that during these crucial years, no one was closer to the Rav than Manny, Rabbi Emanuel Holzer, and his sons, Rabbi David Holzer, and Rabbi Dr. Barry Holzer, who happens to be my student as well. And David's married to my student. I'm very with that family, if you remember your Chinese. Now, it's true that when, by the 1970s, the Rav mellowed, and he couldn't stop the tape recording. It became impossible because you have the development of cassettes. But Manny already was recording the Rav publicly. He was recording the Rav, and he was recording Rebbe, I'm recording you, and every night he'd take the tape home to check it out, make a copy. The Rav heard about it, and the Rav already had mellowed. In my days, if the Rav knew you made a copy of a tape that was recorded for him, your head would have been chopped off in public. The execution would have made the Chinese execution squad look timid by comparison. And I'm not exaggerating. But by the 1970s, the Rav mellowed. You understand? So, Elena, what's going to happen? Original. It's obviously the Rav's tape. It's obviously the Rav's tape because it's impossible to have such a clear copy clandestinely copied. This had to be the Rav's tape. It's only a theory. My theory is very simple. I had a classmate, Alan Goldstein, Dr. Alan Goldstein. Dr. Alan Goldstein was a very interesting fellow. He came into YU. He was a Tel's yeshiva boy from Cleveland. He came to YU against his rabbinic will. Already by the mid-50s, people were cursing out YU, etc. I know when I wanted to go to YU from Lakewood, it's like telling them I wanted to go with Vase from Yerushalayim to go live in China. So when a guy came from Tels, they also maledicted him. And he came in, he was a Telser, a fellow who held by learning, and he went to medical school. And he became, not only was he the Rav's Talmud, but in later years, he was the Rav's doctor. Whatever his specialty was, he was the Rav's internist. And I don't have to tell you, as you grow older, I know it myself, my best friend is becoming my doctor. It's not so simple. I see my doctor, I see her at least every 3 weeks, every 4 weeks now. It's not so simple. So your doctor becomes your best friend, understand? It's not so simple. The Rav became very attached to Dr. Goldstein. This was told to me, because you know, again, I'm living in Israel at the time, but I had very close contact with the Holzer family, and I knew what was going on. I have a feeling that the Rav gave some tapes to Dr. Goldstein for safekeeping. And this has to be among the tapes. This is my gut reaction, because there's no other way this could surface. Manny Holzer in the 50s was a little kid. He could never have taped the Rav. The Rav would have executed him. It's impossible. I know that. It's a fact. And you couldn't hide the tape recorders then. Each tape recorder was the size of half the desk. It took four people to carry it. Those of you who have seen the old tape recorder. So my guess is the Rav gave this to her. That's what we heard. We heard Dumasi gave Goldstein certain tapes for safekeeping. And evidently, once the Rav was not functioning, Goldstein's conscience started to bother him, like my conscience bothered me with the tapes I had that I gave to YU here. How can I keep these treasures for myself? And Goldstein evidently gave it to Nordlich. Nordlich will not confirm what I'm telling you. He will not deny it. He will not confirm it. And Rabbi Nordlich is the tzaddik that made it available. Now, let me just say one other word of comment. Rabbi Nordlich, Milton Nordlich, who devotes himself to Rabbi Schechter and the Rav's memory, he's not a YU graduate. He's a gekumener, nishta gebarener. Again, if you remember your Yiddish, they say in Chabadnikim, there are two types of Chabadnikim, a gekumener and a gebarener. The Rav had disciples as well. I'm a gebarener. I was born into it. I grew up in YU. I knew the Rav from the time I was 13 years old, 14 years old. You understand? I'm a gebarener. Nordlich is a gekumener. He didn't know the Rav at all. He knew the Rav very little. He knew the Rav at the tail end. But the tapes, when you study the hundreds of tapes already, you can become a Talmud Mufak of the Rav. Now, he started this whole, it's not a business because he doesn't make much money out of it. And he, Baruch Hashem, understand he did very well in certain investments that basically he has the time to devote to this. So he has made these tapes available. What he did do is certain of the tapes he named. And he named it according to context and content. This tape is called Shira. I want to caution you, it's a very good name. Shira is a perfect name for the tape. It's not what the Rav called it. The Rav never gave names. He spoke on a sugya, that was it. Never gave names. These names that are surfacing now, particularly this tape, is called Shira. The name was given by Rabbi Milton Nordlich. It's not a bad name. Just be aware where it comes from. It's not from the Rav. Okay, and you see here there's a whole major philosophic development. Okay, February 9th, 1955, look at your calendar. You'll find that the Shabbat before was Pashat Shira. And I begin. This past Shabbat, we read two Shirot. Again, Alts is given in Yiddish. This was all said in Yiddish, I'm translating. What were the two Shirot? We read the Yaz Yashir and Pashat B'Shalach. And then in the Haftorah, we read Vatasha, Devorah of Shoftim, Perikei. Two Shirot. Not only did we read it this past Shabbat, but on Shvi Shal Pesach, we will read the Az Yashir, and then we will read the Torah, the Haftorah of David HaMelech, Vayadabe David LaShem, et Divrei HaShira Hazat, from Shmuel Bet, Perik Chaf Bet. So, you see there's a concept in Yahadut of Shira. This concept of Shira is not limited to these 2 days, Pashat B'Shalach and Shvi Yishol Pesach. It's not only limited to these 2 days. Shira plays a great role in the halacha. And is a yesod in Yahadut. Where do we find Shira in the halacha? Well, first of all, we make Kiddush and Havdalah on a kos shel yayin, an open Gemara. Brachat lamed hey amar aleph, the Gemara asks, Minayin Shena Rum Shira Elalayayin Shenema, and the Gemara quotes the Pasuk from Shaiftim, Periktet, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vatomalechem, Hagefen, Hechaldal Tiet Tiroshi, Hamasameich, Elokim Vianashim. The Geffen is not going to give its fruit, the wine that makes man and princes, more God, maybe I should have said Elohim v'Anashim, makes men and lords to rejoice. Im Anashim Mesameach, the Gemara asked, Elohim b'ma Mesameach? Here the Gemara is a play on words. If it makes men happy, how does wine make God happy? Mikan, the Gemara says, She'ein omrim shira elal hayayin. That the whole concept of Shira before HaKadosh Baruch Hu is tied together with wine. And Kiddush v'Havdalah are kiyum of Shira. What is the relationship of the Kiddush to the Kos? There is also a kiyum of Shira when one makes Kiddush and Shira is said on wine. In other words, this interrelationship. This is Kos Shel Bracha. Shirach has to be set in wine. This is the whole concept. Kiddush v'Avdalah. Likewise, when a Jew says Birchat HaMazon on a coast, there is a Kiyum Shel Shirah. We spoke about this in great length last year, that there may be a special Kiyum to say Birchat HaMazon on a coast. We've lost that today. We've lost that. Where do you see someone pausing? You fellas have a mezuman, have a minyan during the week. Do you ever take a kos of wine to say the Birchat HaZimon on a kos of wine? We've lost that. Rabbi Willie, what did the boys tell me last night? Rabbi Mordechai Willick has a friend that every meal he eats, he washes on bread and he benches holding a kos of wine, kos shel yayin, in his hands. And we analyzed it last year. Mamish even be yichidut. There's a special kiyum when you finish the benching. And Brian, you make a bari priya guffin. There's a special blenching of a kol shel bracha, of shira on a kol shel bracha. We've lost it. I don't know. I even see Friday night, people bench from mezuman, they don't use a kol. We've lost it. It's a shame. Shame. You should use a kol. Even during the week, if you have already 10 people, 3 people, you can use a kol. But somehow it just doesn't lend itself to our lifestyle. I don't know. I can tell you halacha l'maisa in the cafeteria, he benched mezumin without a kos. I can remember he asked, you know, 2 boys to join him and answer for him. That just doesn't lend itself. See, modern lifestyle. At home, I don't know. I would imagine without a kos too. I would imagine. Friday night, he was probably more mocked, but we've lost that. I'm saying, it's a special team. It's not my case. See, our problem is our lifestyle. We don't eat anymore. Eating used to be a certain celebration. You didn't eat the way we eat fast food on the rush. Just think for a minute. Eating used to be a family get-together. Who eats with their family during the week? You understand? Everyone is eating. That's why, thank God, we have Friday night. That's Dennis Prager's line. You gave me the tape. Dennis Prager says, hey, Pop, remember me? I was here last Friday night. You know, thank to his father. Haven't seen you all week, Pop. I'm your son, Dennis. Remember me? I was here last week, Friday night. But this is probably why we lost it. Also, you have to understand, we Jews, whatever the reasons are, don't like to drink. In other words, we're sitting here in a room of 12, 13 people. How many of us drink? The statistics throughout the world of males our age would have to show that we average out 3 to 4 drinks a day. Wine, hard liquor. Who drinks here? It's unbelievable. Jewish mentality is such. Whatever it is, we're frightened of drinking. We see what drinking does to you. You fly on a plane in America, fly coast to coast. You watch the goyim during the flight, how much wine they put away. I once took a fast train, from London to Cardiff. My wife and I were sitting there 1 hour and 40 minutes. We were astounded at the beer, and they don't go to the bathroom. I mean, they must have bladders that are 3 times the size of Jewish bladders. I don't know. Those of you are going to be doctors. Do research. It may be the organism. Maybe Darwin is right. They react to the reality of life. I don't know. We Jews have lost the art of drinking. And now they say drinking is healthy. It's supposed to have white, red wine to wash down the food. Who can drink during the week? With Shabbos, I force myself. I have to drink. What can I do? But during the week, so I don't know. We've lost it. But it's a kosher bracha. And you can check. Rabbi Willig is here now. Rabbi Willig is here. Check with him what the story is. Because the boys were telling me, it's Aid me, PA. But if you have the Baldova here, check directly. He got in, right? Those that have to come today, who knows when they'll get here. But he got in. Check with him. Now, the same with Birchat Erusin or Birchat Nesuin. Isn't it a kosher bracha? Isn't Chazal Metakein? Isn't there Shir involved? Isn't there Thanksgiving? And he said, not only that, at a Brit, we mamish say it openly. Birchat Ashekidesh Yudid Mi Betin is said on a kosher bracha. The same thing with Shechiyonu on Yom Tov. And the Rambam Poska is Posek LaHalacha, that you have to tie the Shechiyonu together with the kosher bracha. The truth of the matter is, you all know, you can make a Shechiyonu when your wife lights candles, she's making a Shechiyonu without a kosher bracha. Yom Kippur we make without a kosher bracha. But whenever we can, the Rambam is Posek, Hilchot Shabbat, Perik Chavtet, Halacha Chavtet, Ketzat Mavachim, Belel Yom Tov, Betchilam Mavarech Ala Geffen, V'yach, and then the Kiddush, V'yach HaKach, Mavarech Shechiyonu. And look into the Magid Nishna on the next halacha in Perek Chavtet, halacha Chavkimel, B'yobn Taibim, Omrim Shechiyonu, Al HaKos, Acha HaKiddush. So you see that there's that Shechiyonah was also part of the kosher. It's also part of the kosher bracha. It's also part of the kosher shira. That it's not stam you're making a Shechiyonah. It's the Gemara in bracha at taplam and heyomar aleph. Whenever you have a kosher bracha, it is tied in with shira, and this is shevech v'hodaya to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every bracha which Chazal will mesader and a kosher has within it the kiyum shel shira. This is why it is nitfas in the chalois of what the Gemara says, ein omrim shira el al hayayim. So number one, halachically, and those of you who were in the shir last year, Abna will testify, I spent about 5 months, I would say, 4 months, just commenting on kosher bracha and kiddush, havdalah, birchat hamazon, erusin, nesu, and I hold that to be the great, I don't know, my own opinion, everyone has their own love. I hold the Rebbe to his greatest heights and brisker analysis in that particular sugya. I must have spent 4 months in class. I remember we began before Purim and we finished Shavuos time. So that's one type of kosher bracha, one type of halal, one type of shira, kosher bracha, whether it's erusin or kedushin or birchat hamazon, kiddush, havdalah, asher kiddush shedid mibetin, brit milah. That's all shira on a kosher bracha. But that's not the only shira. In addition, there is also a kiyum of shira without a kos of yayin. For instance, according to the Ramban, Nachmanides, the recitation of Halil and Yontov is also a kiyum of shira d'oraita. See the Shoresh Rishon of the Rambam, Maimonides. I got to be careful. I found my own student. I was writing something for the book. And poor Joey, I was citing the Hasagat HaRamban to the Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam. I was calling something the Rav calls from there. And he got so confused, it came back to me from the computer, that I was quoting Maimonides. He didn't realize I had to hit him over the head. This is Hasagat of the Ramban, so I better be careful here. I'm quoting here the Hasagat of Nachmanides to the Shoresh Rishon of Maimonides in the Sefer HaMitzvot. Because in the Shoresh Rishon, Maimonides holds that Halil and Yontav is only a Rabbanan. And in the Hasagah, the Ramban writes, and by the way, in the standard edition, the Rabbi Yaakov Shurkin edition, anyone who Rabbi Yaakov Shurkin was he your Rebbe? Yeah, he was a Rebbe in Chaim Berlin. He issued, again, you can't even start to appreciate this, in the late 40s, early 50s, what Sfarim were available in America, and certain Rebbeim, Rosh Yeshiva, Hasidic Rebbeim, would publish Sfarim. It became a business. They made panasa from it. Rabbi Shurkin republished the first Sefer HaMitzvot in the United States. All of us grew up on his photographed edition of the Sefer HaMitzvot. So in his edition, which is standard, you'll find the Sagar HaRamban, what I'm quoting. So the Ramban says, Im kein lome yit palei ala halosh neftavala moshe b'sina shomer yisrael b'shir b'moadim lekel shatzom mitzvayim b'karol lichem et hayom v'kib diglam labo da tovu b'davet v'dikin lichem et ahalal hazeh kadei shir b'o v'chein b'mikdash min hatorahu k'divrei omer ike shir b'peh. And that Ramban rips apart Maimonides. And he says, what are you talking about? The whole concept of Shira, a Jew has to give thanksgiving to God. This is a din d'oraita. God took us out of Egypt. God was mavdil us to his avodah. David came and gave this concept a formal language when he wrote the Hallel. But it's not a kiyum d'rabbanan. It's a kiyum d'oraita. And the Ramban ties it together again with a sugya we spoke about last year, the year before, Ika Shira Bepeh. The whole sugya in Menachot, what is the real Shira? Is it Shira Bepeh or is it Shira Bekli? And he says the whole concept of Shira Bepeh in the Beit HaMikdash, this is a Kiyum D'oraita. Hallel is just a formal language. But even before the Hallel, there was a Chiyuv d'oraita l'hodot l'hallel l'shabeach et Hashem, and the Ramban holds it's the oraita, not the Rabbanan. So you see, there's Shira b'kos, there's Shira b'peh, Hallel. But more than that, the Rav says the same with Kedusha. We say twice daily, Shachris, Mincha. It's also b'kiyum Shira. Chazal already called it a Shira. See the Gemara in Chulin Daf Tzadi Aleph Amid Bet 91b. Ein Maleich Hasharet Omrim Shira Lamala Ad Shem Yomru Yisrael Lamata. It's a very powerful Gemara. It's if the Malachim are waiting for our Minyanim to begin, and the minute you begin saying Kadosh, 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 then the Malachim say the Kadosh and the Baruch Hu. I don't have to tell you the philosophy behind this. We could comment for hours. The interrelationship. The Malachim have to wait for the human initiative. When we take the initiative, then they can say Shira Lamala. It's in a merit the concept. But I have to tell you in parentheses, this is what the Hasidim destroyed. You see? If those of you that know the real Hasidim, it's frightening. I was in the Boston. I was in Boston yesterday in Hanover. I was visiting my daughter. So I run down to Mincha. Ribbono Shel Olam, sunset yesterday was 4:56. I couldn't believe they stand around and that everyone is there. They're talking, they're chatting. They finally began Ashrei 4:53. You think that's bad? I've already seen Hasidim, Ribbono Shel Olam, they're going to Mikveh of Shabbos, they're coming out of the Mikveh. They're drying themselves. The sunset has long taken place and they have not yet said Lechuna Ranana. So when I was a kid, I asked the Chassid, how can you do this? And I couldn't believe the answer. Then I found this in Hasidic literature. No wonder they go and put them into Chayram. They quoted this Gemara, that Shabbos, the Malachim can't begin Shabbos till the Guru begins Shabbos downstairs. The Malachim can't begin Mincha till the Jew begins Mincha downstairs. And if we're late, all we've done is we've held the Malachim up. So what? But they have to wait for us. And we're the humans who decide. And if we're a little late, may Hechite say, Ribbono Shel Olam, no wonder to go and put him in the Chayra. What can I tell you? But this is an open, it's a merit to Gemara. The philosophic implications here are overwhelming. It's beautiful. It's magnificent that a man of that, again, look, those of you familiar with the Rav's thinking, there's a great deal of Hasidic influence. And this concept here, you see it in Ish Halacha, but it means the simplest act of the little human being has heavenly connotations. And it, this Gemara, very powerful, an open Gemara. So you have Kedusha, also Shira B'Peah. Similarly, no, the greatest Kedusha of all, the Psukei Dezimra that we say daily with two brachot, Baruch Shema and Yishtabach, is also a Kiyam of Shira. In general, the Rav said, whenever we say Tehillim, which ends with Halleluka, there is always a Kiyam of Shira. Halleluka. For Psukei Dezimra, the Prakam of Tehillim that end with Halleluka were chosen. Take a look at which Pirkei Tehillim we choose. One after another, Halleluka comes at the end. When a Jew wishes to be Mitpalel, he must say Shira before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You just can't go and daven without Psukei Dezimra. There has to be a matter. The Rav developed this many times over. There has to be a matter for tefillah. And the basic matir is a Psukei Dezimra. This is why Psukei Dezimra is very important, and chaval ma'od that a lot of us have an attitude of zilzul. We come late to minyan and we hop in the Psukei Dezimra. And I admire, I see people in my shul when I come in 6:20 on Shabbos morning, 6:30, there are people sitting there ready that are saying the Psukei Dezimra so slowly, word by word, with concentration. This is the way it should be. Kol hakavod lahem. Because once they start davening, 6:30, I don't say they rush, but nevertheless, too much concentration, you can't have in the Psukei Dezimra. The Chazan doesn't slow down until he hits Yishtabach. But you see, there's so much Shira. Our whole religious life is structured around Shira. Whether it's Shira through a kos, whether it's Shira b'peh, whether it's Halel, whether it's Psukei Dezimra, there is so much Shira involved, so much thanksgiving of the Jew before God. Let's go further, what the Rav develops here. Fine. Well, this is the first point. Axiomatic, basic. There's a concept of Shira in a Jew's relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In truth, the Rav said, it appears that there are two types of Shira. At times, we say Shira when a miracle takes place. Shalo al pi derech hateva. Something unreal takes place. The Hashgacher at this time decides to abrogate the rules of nature. This is Shalom al-Pi Derech HaTeva. Shira, thanksgiving. Halacha l'maisa, where did we see Shira, this type of miracle in our lifetime? No, if anyone was on that Air France plane or that Pan Am plane, whatever it was, in Entebbe, in Uganda, and you return, don't you have to make a bracha? Asali neis b'makom hazeh? That's mamish lo b'derech hateva. Can't be explained. However, this is so basic. This is Murvuchim, whatnot. When God describes the change to Terech HaTeva, this is not a happy decision. Normally, the world does not function. The Ratzon HaKadmon was that the world should not function with miracles. The greatest covet to God is the orderliness of the world. The fact that the world has a Terech HaTeva. When the Hashgacha at times decides to abrogate the rules of nature, the Ibn Ezra brings a viewpoint that the word kadai, shadai, and the word shodeid come from the same shoresh, the same root. It is violence. A shodeid is violent. He robs. When God has to change the laws of nature, it's violence. It's not desirable. The Ibn Ezra, Breishit, Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Vayehi Avraham ben Tishim Shana v'Teisha Shana Vayera Hashem al Avraham Vayomela v'ani kel shadai Hitalech lefanai v'heyed tamim. And the Ibn Ezra brings down v'rabim pishuhu migezerat shodeid. Could you imagine kel kadai? And you're calling God a shodei? What, there's a BMT boy who just dropped extra falafel or something? Well, what kind of words are these? The Ibn Ezra. But the Rebbe explains so beautifully. Yes, a rob is not desirable. At times, a Kaddish Baruch Hu has to act like a robber. And the use of that name for God, that kadai, must at times mean that occasionally God must find it necessary to change the chukei teva and to change the maisa bereshit. But this is not desirable. It's bebechinat shodeid. It's only if there's no other choice. It's violence. That's the Ibn Ezra. We say Hallel on Pesach. Yitziat Mitzrayim. Kriyat Yamsuf. We say Hallel on Shvuot, Matan Torah. We say Halal Sukkah, the Anani HaKavod. This type of Halal is called by Chazal Halal HaMitzri. The Gemara in Bracha, Daf Nun Vav Amid Aleph. Ikruyen Hilela Mitzraya B'chalma. Ikruili et Halal HaMitzri. That an Amora tells a story that he had a vision in his dreams that he was reading Hallel HaMitzri. And what does it mean? Rashi explains, Halula Mitzraya, Hallel Shonakorim B'Pesach, Ulafishesh Hallel Acha HaKarui Hallel HaGadol, Karin Liza Hallel HaMitzri. And Rashi explains, why Halal HaMitzri? Because there's Halal HaGadol, Hodel Hashem Kitov. We'll talk about it in a second. To differentiate between the Halal that he was shown, what we call Stam Halal. When we say Halal, what do we mean? Chazal call it Halal HaMitzri. Stam Halal is Halal HaMitzri. Now what does this mean? Halal HaMitzri, this is the Halal he saw in his dream. It's not Halal HaGadol. What is the difference? Of course, Yitziat Mitzrayim was a supernatural event. Therefore, whenever we say Shira for something that is supernatural, we call it Halil HaMitzri. Halil HaMitzri refers specifically when God moves heaven and earth, when so many miracles are done, when God becomes a Shodeid. This is Halil HaMitzri. This type of Halil, this type of Shira can be said by everyone. Great people and the masses. Why? everyone can appreciate a miracle. Everyone can understand the greatness of what happened in Entebbe. Everyone can understand the miracle of Sheshet HaYamim, what happened in those 6 days back in June of 1967. Everyone can appreciate Yetziat Mitzrayim. Everyone can appreciate the Anani HaKavod. Both Moshe and Bnei Yisrael said the Oz Yashir in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Nechemya. See the Mishnah in Sota, Perikei, Mishnah Dalet, and the Gemara in Sota, Daf Lamed Amed Bet, Melamed Shayu Yisrael Onon Shirach HaRab Shamosh Al Kondavak Kadavak Kekorimet HaHalel, Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Kekorimet HaShma, Velo, Korim et HaHalel. What does Rabbi Nechemya mean? They're talking about the Oz Yashir. One opinion is they said it responsibly. What the Jews said, Moshe didn't say. What Moshe said, the Jews didn't say. Another opinion, Rabbi Nechemya, that they read it like Shema, not like the HaHalel. So the Gemara says, what do you mean you read it like Shema? What does the Gemara mean by this? And the Gemara says, the Amakulhu Bahadei Hadadi. All the Jews said it together, like you read the Shema. You read the Shema. You ever stand near Yeshivat Panovich when they say the Shema? You can hear the Shema from Yeshivat Panovich 3 miles away. But they say it all together. That's the way they said the Oz Yashir. The Bnei Yisrael did not just recite the refrain, but said the entire Shira with Moshe Rabbeinu. When a great Nes, a Nes Galui takes place, when there is a Yeshua Gedola, when God is Mishadeh the Briah, when every human being can point with his finger and declare, Zekelivian Vehu, then there is no difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and a lowly Shifcha. Note who already said this. Chazal already said it. Mechilta to Bishalach, Pashat Hashira, Subdivision Gimel. Doesn't Rashi quote this? Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Ata Omer Sheraata Shifkal Hayam, Ma Shelora Ayecheskel, V'chol Shah Hanaviyim. When there's a great miracle, even a Shifcha Al Hayam can see the miracle, can see the greatness, can be overwhelmed. And this is why it's just amazing. When you look back to the 6 days, there were no apikosim in the land of Israel. When they published the stamp in memory of the Six-Day War, what was on the stamp? The Kotel HaMaravi. Everything else was forgotten. Ben-Gurion, I can still remember him coming to the Kotel, Moshe Dayan coming to the Kotel. It was just overwhelming. Uganda, Entebbe, July 4th, 1976, it was one of the greatest days, if not the greatest day, of all the decades I have lived out at Mata Kodesh. There was no disunity. Thousands flocked to the airport, dancing in the streets all over. Even a shifcha, you don't have to be a lamdan, don't have to be a gon, don't have to be a philosopher, don't have to be filled with teir and yirat shemayim. Even a shifcha can appreciate the miracle. So this is one type of shira. This is the shira of Halel Hamitzri. The Halel, when a great Nes Al Tivi takes place, everyone sees it, even the shifcha can appreciate it. This is not desirable, perhaps. Perhaps it would be much better if the world could work naturally, but every once in a while, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to do miracles. If not, the Jews would not survive. Period. Let me end off. Watch. There is a second type of Shira, which is said over the wonders of nature, of an organized world. Just the opposite. You see the Rav here? This is the Rav. This is philosophy. This is his uniqueness. This is a shira for Gilui Shechina, which is indigenous and inherent in the constant laws of nature. The sunrise, the sunset, the flow of the river. This is not a shira on the modification of nature, on the alteration of nature, on the violence done to nature, but rather shira on the very essence of nature. Where do you find it in Tehillim? The most striking place in Tehillim. We say it every Rosh Chodesh. Baruch Hinafshi, Tehillim Kaftalad. Psukim Aleph, Gimel, Barkin Atat Hashem, Hashem Elokai, Gadalta Maod, Hod Rava Lavashta, O Te'or Kesalma, No Teshemayim Kiriyra, HaMekareh B'mayim Aliyotav, HaSam Avim Rechovo, HaMahalech Al Kanfei Ruach. This is a Shira on the process of nature, not a Shira because of the violence or the shidur of nature, but rather on the very essence of the natural law. Sunrise, sunset, winter, summer, the beautiful weather in the state of Israel, and what's going on the eastern seaboard. And only a demented individual like Aaron Rakefet can be on a plane tonight heading for New York, all because he agreed to speak in West Hempstead and Staten Island on the west side. Unbelievable. But that's nature. The winters here are different. This is not America. This is Israel. This is Israel. Baruch Hinafshi. This is the Hallel. This is the Hallel of Psukei Dezimra. This is the Hallel that begins. Tehilim, Perik Kuf Memhei, Pasuk Aleph, Tilala David, Aramimcha, Elokai Hamelech, and concludes, Kol Hanishama, Tehalel Ka, Halleluka. Here the stress is on Maisa Bereshis. Poteach et Yodecha, Umazbia, Lachol Chai Ratzon. We harvest, we sow, we plant, we harvest, we gather, we produce beautiful food, nature. Tilam kufim zayin pasuk chet hamachaseh shemayim biyavim hamechin laretz matah hamatzmiach harim chatzir kufim zayin tet zayin hanotrein shelek ketzemer kfar ke'efer yifazer. It's nature. Absolute nature. It's a different type of halal. That's Halal HaMitzri. And this is regular Halal. Halal HaMitzri, miracles. Yetziat Mitzrayim, Matan Torah. God comes down, gives us a Torah. And none of your covet of Sukkot. That's Halal HaMitzri. The other Halal is just the opposite. Halal Shira, not because of miracles, but the beauty and the constant ongoing creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazal referred to these Psukei Dezimra as Halal as well. One familiar of the mood of Chazal and not only of the Gemara, know that Chazal always preferred the regular Halal over the Halal HaMitzri. Shabbat Daf Kuf Yudchet Amid Bet Omer Rab Yossi Yehei Chalki Migomrei Halal B'chol Yom. You all know this Gemara. Rav Yossi is boasting, Halavai, my share should be with those that say Halel every day. The Gemara has tremendous halachic implications. I'll allude to it in 1 minute. Eini, Gemara asks, V'ha-ma-ma, ha-kori halel b'chol yom, ha-reza macharev u-magadev? You read Halal every day, you're blasphemous. How can Rabbi Yossi suddenly boast, I read the Halal every day, I'm a giant, I'm a tzaddik. Ribbono shel Olam. Chas v'chalila, if I'd be blasphemous, I wouldn't boast about it. And the Gemara answers, Ki kamrinan b'psukei dezimra. That what he was boasting about, saying Halal every day, was the psukei dezimra. They are not blasphemous. It's an amazing thing. In other words, absolutely, Chazal preferred the regular Halal, the Halal of normal existence, over the Halal HaMitzri. Chazal preferred that God should let the world run in its natural habitat, its normal fashion, rather than do violence to the laws of nature. It's not just Gemaras. This is the whole mood of Chazal, the whole mood of Jewish philosophy. Why? Why? What is the implication here? Where does this affect us halachically? Why has this Gemara and this analysis been a source of so much controversy? New gentleman, you tell me. It's Yom HaTzmud. The whole Halal and Yom HaTzmud. Did the Rav say Halal? Didn't he say Halal and Yom HaTzmud? Where to say the Halal? The Rav had tremendous problems. Because to say Halal HaMitzri when you don't have to say it is Macharef Umagadei, Bet Hashem. And the Rav felt there was a key mean without a bracha. In other words, everyone says, but we don't say a bracha. So what if you don't say a bracha? The Sfadim basically never say a bracha. It's a whole machleket in Tosfot. Whether you say a bracha on I guess they say a bracha, Ligmar Tahalel, they probably say on the Shlosh Regalim. Outside of that, in Rosh Chodesh, they don't say a bracha. At least the Eidot HaMizrach, I'm talking about the real Eidot HaMizrach, they don't say a bracha. So even without a bracha, there's a kiyum of Halel. But Mecharev u'Magadev. This is why, again, the Rav's practice, these stories, that story, I have a feeling he wasn't constant, but if he was given his choice, he would say Halel and Yom HaTzmud after the davening. You understand what I'm saying? Who can tell me why? After the davening. Because if you say it after the davening, it can be a kiyum of Tehillim. When you say it as an integral part of the davening, then it becomes a kiyum of Halal HaMitzri. Halal HaMitzri, when not needed, is Mecharef Megadev. If you say it at a different point in the davening, not as an integral part, where it becomes, then you can say it. But Torah Tehillim, so Miman of Shach, if there's a kiyum, and if Taka there were, Nisei Nisim here, and if we have a right to say Halal and Hey Iya, which was a day, but Sof Kol Sof, Ben Gurion picked the day, you understand? No greater miracle happened on that day than the other days. Ben Gurion declared the state on that day. And even that day, the state was only declared Hey Iya. You know the story. To rush up before Shabbat, it was just by chance. Originally they wanted to declare it on Vav Iyar or Zayin Iyar, on Sunday. But they rushed it because the British were leaving. So, all right, maybe you have to say. But if you don't have to say Halal HaMitzri, so you say it. B'vachinat Tehillim. Close the parentheses. That was the Rav Shita. So all these people that say the Rav didn't say Halal don't know what they're talking about. The Rav did say Halal Yom HaTzmud. All these people who say the Rav didn't say Halal in the proper place know what they're talking about, but perhaps they don't know why. The Rav, this is his viewpoint. As a what he did, Halach L'maisa, I probably depended on the minyan he davened with. Over the years, there are very famous stories of the aggravation he had in the yeshiva when Bnei Akiva minyanim started saying halal with a bracha, and they introduced the Kriyat HaTorah and HaTorah and what went on. There was a whole story. I don't have time for it now. One day I'll give a total analysis from the Rav. I think I gave it 2 years ago of how to observe Yom HaTzmud. But this Gemara is very important. But let me finish up. Why do Chazal have this approach to Halal Mitzri? Why are they negative? And why do they prefer regular Halal? The main reason is that the religious experience must be developed through daily and normal living and not be based upon miracles and supernatural events. We see the wisdom of God, the Chochmat HaBorei, through the cosmos and organic life. This is more inspiring than the 10 plagues and the Kriyat Yam Suf. There is no comparison between Kriyat Yam Suf and the death of so many Egyptians with the wisdom and depth of God's daily system of nature and organic life. And it's a very powerful philosophic statement. Miracles, fine. They happen once in a lifetime, once in a generation, once in a century, once in an epic, once in a millennium. That doesn't make for a good Jew. What makes for the same shifka, let me put it very bluntly, it's my own language, but the same shifka remains a shifka, with or without Kriyat Yam Suf. She saw it all, but she didn't become Yecheskel HaNavi or Yeshaya HaNavi. What makes for a good Jew is to appreciate God in the daily, in the mundane, in the ongoing miracle of creation. The sun rose this morning. The sun will set tonight. We eat. We smile. We laugh. We cry. We fall in love. We marry. We have children. We perpetuate ourselves. That's the main halal. That's what Chazal preferred. Not the shodeid, but the psukei de zimra. And watch, this is the Rav will end off here. Only the Rav is capable of this. This is why I can't get angry. Rabbi Lichtenstein, I don't know, he used to give talks when he first came. He gave some public talks. And in every public talk, he quoted this church father and he quoted this from the confession literature. And the girls in Michalad, the Israelis, the postgraduate students, I thought, used to beat me. He would be so angry, you know. And I said, look, girls, I can't get angry. He said, I understand it hurts your ears to hear Rabbi Lichtenstein quote the church fathers, but why can't I tell you? The Rav used to do it. The Rav used to do it. You know, they couldn't argue with me, but they walked away. They were, and I said, yeah, he did it in his public lectures. Not in the Shia. I told you, in the Shia, you didn't know the man knew anything outside of Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Rambam, and Ravid. Absolutely. Rebbe, I'm not lying. I say it to you as if Rebbe was sitting here. Those who knew the Rav, you had no idea he knew anything outside. It was just amazing. You had no idea. But in his public lectures, certainly Chazal felt that Christianity misstated the Torah position. Paul of Tarshish, born as Saul, claimed that Jews, he's now quoting the church fathers, Jews wait for a wonder. This is not so. Jews did not depend upon wonders. Chazal held that since the Ratzon HaKadmon of the Ribbono Shel Olam expressed itself in the orderly running of the world, it was incorrect to break the normal routine of the world even for 1 minute. If the Ribbono Shel Olam must at times use supernatural means to save human beings, it is the fault of man. It is a sign that man is so deeply enveloped by the Sha'arei Tumah that it takes miracles to save him. Miracles are a bidyavat, not a lachatchila. And didn't the Rav say that so many times? And isn't this so true? If you take Hasidic literature, the Baal Shem Tov, if you're a Hasid, everything the Baal Shem Tov said was known for thousands of years. Why did he reveal it? He had to reveal it to save the Jews. Didn't the Rav say similarly about the state of Israel? Why were we Zaycha? Why our generation? So many Dorot of Jews, Yireyim and Shleimim, Kedoshim, Bitzadikim, Mosa, Nefesh. Why our generation of the Ben-Gurions and the Ben-Tzvis and the Chaim Weizmans and the Yitzchak Rabins and the Shimon Perises and the Ezer Weizmans? Why our generation? And the Rav said, God had no choice. Without the state of Israel, we would not have survived the Holocaust. God only does miracles when there's no other way for the Jews to survive. It is a sad notation on the Jews' record, or a sad connotation when God has to do a miracle to save him. So I reiterate, we'll pick up, but I left off, thank God, there's so much more to this year. This is so seminal, so filled with insight. But I left off, it's perfect. Kadosh Baruch Hu was mezakami, and you were mezakami. You don't realize it because I don't know what's going to happen, but all right, I learned one thing in life. You have to b'teich b'Hashem chesed yisov aven. You ever heard my bottom that? B'teich b'Hashem, sometimes you have no choice. You have to be b'teich b'Hashem. You understand? All right, chesed yisov aven. And this is an instance where I have no choice. I have to be b'teich b'Hashem. But I have to thank you because I have to speak Friday night already. It would have been a lot easier for me to have left here Sunday night, get to New York. I stay in where I stay. I'm paying the same rent for whether I stay 2.5 weeks or 2 weeks. It's the same rent. They're not going to charge me more. So I have a house waiting for me. Everything is there. And I could go and I could relax and regain my strength. But I said, no, it's not fair to the boys because I'm going to miss 2 weeks. I'm giving intercession. To miss a third, Rabbi Salavat, not fair. I have to go Tuesday night. It'll be a little harder. So now just think, had I left Sunday night, I would have wound up in Montreal. Had I left last night, that was Sunday night, Bangor, Maine. The 1 o'clock plane last night didn't even leave. It first left 8 o'clock this morning. So Baruch Hashem, I now heard the snow stopped in New York. I imagine they'll dig out today. So Bezrat Hashem, but I have to thank you. It's in the skut of my Talmidim, as my whole life has been, that I was suffering to this. Gentlemen, to reiterate, we finished out the 1956 talk. The Divrei Torah, it's minor Divrei Torah, but it's very nice. Brian will get up in front of BMT boys, Bezrat Hashem, the new BMT. You get up and you talk, you know, and you have to encourage a young fellow to strive, that Kedusha is beyond you. You must achieve. The Rebbe once devoted a whole Yachei Kala to the Ramban and the Varam, and the whole theme of the Yachei Kala was in the mid-70s. I walked into my mother yesterday, my stepfather says, you recognize the voice, a man of 91, he's listening to Rav's tape. I mean, I said, let me hear. I told him, Yachei Kala, 1978, Pashat Ramban. He said, absolutely, right on. And the Rav is talking about the whole theme of the Ramban, of Sefer Devarim, is Bikshuhu, that you have to, Ubikashta Misham, you have to search for God, seek God. He builds it upon a Ramban, it's very powerful. And that's why the Tzimtzum, that's why the rest of Kedushat, and even the Kohen Gadol can't go on the Aliyah on top of the Kodesh Kedashim except once in many years. It's a meridic part. We finished that last 56 talk. We began 55. 55 already is overwhelming, because here already he's not an after-dinner speaker, it's not an appeal in his honor, he's not going to give Musa why you only gave $50 and $100, not $500 and $1,000. Man, the Rebbe is talking like that in 1956. Try to understand what we're talking about. Understand. To raise $1,000.